Chapter 3. San Antonio, Texas. On official blueprints, the windowless room near the top of the glass office tower, overlooking the peaceful waters of the San Antonio River, did not exist. Even the city inspectors had no idea it was there. The subcontractors who installed the soundproof walls, the separate electrical conduits, and the voice-activated security locks were paid well to keep their mouths zipped. If they thought it strange to build a secret door through the shower stall of a private bathroom, they kept their opinions to themselves. The room's decor was as clinically functional as a laboratory: uncluttered beige walls, a bank of oversized IBM computer monitors and hard drives, a document safe, and a center work table. A man sat in front of a computer, his hardened face washed by the cold light from the oversized monitor. He scrolled down several pages of type and photos and stopped at a series of line drawings. With a click of the cursor, he enlarged one particular sketch and zoomed in on a section of the screen, hard blue eyes taking in every detail. Satisfied he had seen the entire file, he saved it on a floppy disk and pressed the print command. As the high-speed printer whirred away, he put the disk in an envelope and locked it in the safe. He gathered the printed file into a manila folder, stepped through the shower stall, went through another door into his office, and switched on an intercom.
"I'll need a few minutes, right away," he said.
"He has time now," a female voice replied. 10 minutes in between appointments."
He left his office with the folder and walked through a maze of thickly carpeted hallways. He was tall, at least 6 feet, no longer young, but the only concession to age was his close-cropped silver hair and a slight stoop to his muscular shoulders. His athletic body was still limber and rock-hard, thanks to a Spartan regimen of diet and exercise. Because he rarely smiled or frowned, his face was relatively unlined around the mouth and eyes, as if the skin had been lifted off and stretched over the square jaw and high cheekbones. The floor held the company's administrative offices and could be entered only by those with hand and voice ID. The workspaces were all on other levels, and he saw nobody until he came to the spacious reception area. The high-ceiling space was done in burnt red, brown, and green earth colors, repeating a stylized arrow and square Indian pattern on floor and walls. Behind the receptionist was a semi-abstract mural whose brown-skinned figures and giant, sprouting Quetzal feathers were so intertwined it was hard to tell whether the painting depicted a human sacrifice or a cocktail party. The receptionist sat at a desk that seemed to float on a carpeted sea of burnt orange, unmindful of the painted drama behind her head. The man stopped in front of the desk and, without speaking, glanced toward a thick, dark wood door carved with dozens of writhing figures being tormented in a peasant artist's depiction of hell.
"Mr. Halcon will see you," said the receptionist, a middle-aged woman chosen for her blandness, efficiency, and unquestioning loyalty. The carved door opened into a corner office that was almost as big as the reception area and repeated the Central American theme. Halcon stood at a floor-to-ceiling window, his back to the door.
"Sir, if you have a moment."
Halcon half-turned, displaying the aquiline nose, set in a pale, narrow face, the profile that had earned him his nickname in the bullring.
"Come here, Guzman," he said.
Guzman crossed the room as ordered and stood beside the younger man. Halcon was in his 40s, taller than Guzman by an inch or two. He was ascetically lean, almost delicate-looking. Like everything else about Halcon, appearances were deceiving. In a concession to his role as a businessman, he had long ago cut off the matador's pigtail,
trimmed the Valentino sideburns, and set aside the glittering uniform of the bullring. Yet under his expensive tailored suit still lurked the cruel body of the matador known as the Hawk, who had used his quickness and power to dispatch dozens of brave bulls. If there had been any complaint from the aficionados who followed his brief but illustrious career, it was that the Hawk's kills were coldly efficient and lacked passion. In another age he would have been a deadly swordsman whose blade would have found the beating hearts of men, not bulls. "Do you know why I chose this particular office in this particular location, Guzman?"
"If I would venture a guess, Don Halcon, it offers a good view of many of your company's holdings."
Halcon chuckled at the response.
"An honestly blunt answer, as I would expect from my old guardian, but hardly a flattering one. I am not some burgher keeping an eye on his fields." "My apologies, Don Halcon. I did not mean to offend."
"No offense taken. It was a natural assumption, but an erroneous one." His smile vanished, and his words took on the quiet, steely edge dangerous people give their voices.
"I chose this office for one reason. The view it offers of the Mission San Antonio de Valero. It reminds me of what is past, what is present, and what will be."
He gestured out at the sprawl of the city visible through the tinted floor-to-ceiling windows. "I often stand here and think of how history can veer off in unexpected directions, drastically changed by the actions of the few. The Alamo was a defeat for its defenders, but it was the beginning of the end for Santa Anna. He was captured at San Jacinto, and in one decisive engagement Texas became independent from Mexico. The lesson of history is clear, is it not?"
"It wouldn't be the first time the death of martyrs brought down the powerful."
"Precisely. Nor will it be the last. What happened once can happen again. The Alamo had 183 defenders against 6,000 Mexican troops, showing that the determined few can transform the world for the many." He paused, alone with his thoughts, staring out at the sprawling city. After a moment he turned to Guzman like a man emerging from a dream.
"Why did you want to see me?"
"There's a matter of some importance, sir. I just intercepted this transmission from Morocco to the University of Pennsylvania."
He handed the file over. Halcon leafed through the material, finally fastening on the sketch, and murmured,
"Astounding."
He looked up.
"There can be no mistake. Our surveillance system is practically foolproof. As you know, every archaeological expedition in the world sends proposals to our TimeQuest Foundation, asking for funds and volunteers. Those with serious potential are assigned priority. The computers automatically access all transmissions from the field to their home base and search for pre-programmed keywords, or fax, telex, and email messages.
Los Hermanos has a watcher on site?"
"Yes, Gonzalez is there."
"Excellent," Halcon said. "He knows what he has to do." Guzman nodded and clicked his heels softly. As he turned to go, his lips seemed to curl in a lopsided smile. But it was only a trick of the light and shadow caused by the white scar that ran from his right cheekbone to the corner of his mouth.